spare the wise and the wonder.
Welcome back to Mages and Murder Dads, the best show dedicated to the Baldur's Gate franchise and beyond. I'm Cameron, and I play Ticklevar, the Sorcerer.
And I'm Danny, and I play Balthazar, the Barbarian.
This is episode 31, and we're making our way through the first half of chapter 4 of Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah, no, we're really doing it.
We are playing the damn game.
We're playing the damn game.
Plot points are flying on by in a way that they never have before.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like we're trying.
It's almost like we're trying to make progress through the game.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have even known?
Please like and subscribe to this video or to this channel that you're watching it.
Like and subscribe to this channel.
Mm-hmm. Like the channel, subscribe to the video.
Yeah, but you get all the updates, all the comments on the video. They go right into your feed.
Follow us on Facebook. Add us as a friend on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Those links are down in the description below.
Yeah, and also we've got a really lively Discord channel.
We do. That's a new thing. We might have talked about it a little bit in the last episode, but there's going to be a permalink to that down in the comments below, and we would love it for you to come on through. We talk a lot about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds right now, but we could talk about anything
that
anyone wanted to talk about.
We really need to just make a dedicated channel to PlayerUnknown nonsense.
Uh-huh. PlayerUnknown's Baldur's Gate. What does that look like?
Looks like Saravok just dropped right into the Noble District. He's 1v1ing Belt right now. They're dueling. The circle's closed around them.
Oh no, Saravok's got a pistol. He's got a 1911.
1911.
Belt's got an AKM. With an 8x scope.
Saravok's running through the halls of the Archduke's palace. He's trying to get that level 3 backpack and just get out of there.
You think that's the most important supply in PlayerUnknown's Baldur's Gate?
You can't have anything else. You can't pick up health elixirs. You can't pick up two-handed greatswords. You can't pick up an SKS without a level 3 backpack.
It's a real struggle. All right, well, Brendan Green, aka PlayerUnknown, could add us about that one. We got a lot of hot content coming down the pipe, but
I don't know about that.
Well, you know, don't undersell it here on the show. But yeah, so we have that Discord, and it's really fun. We're having a great time. We also have a Patreon, which we have talked about for approximately every episode that we have ever done, but it's officially been rebranded. Range Touch is up there now. Range Touch, of course, being what this channel has kind of congealed into. And I got two quick things that, you know, this is Mages and Murder Dad, so you might not care about all of this, but the pitch here is that we've got two monthly goals, one at $200 and one at $400. At $200, that just allows us to kind of like feel good about all the work that we put into all the videos on this channel. We've got this one, we've got Danny's Dark Souls rating video, and we got a couple other things that we're working on that are going to debut over the next month or so. We've got a $400 goal where we will start a new podcast. Now people in the comments for this show have repeatedly said, hey, you should start like your D&D reminisce hour or your talking about tabletop hour, because we joke about that a lot. But here's the thing. If you go and support us on Patreon, help us get to the $400 a month ringer, we're going to do a well-produced, well-thought-out, well-made podcast about tabletop gaming. It's going to be about introducing you to campaign settings and showing you different rule sets for making different types of games. It's going to be called Helpful Homunculi.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to range from those kind of reminiscing about our experiences in particular campaign settings or particular rule systems. It'll be talking about kind of the nitty-gritty mechanics, and also we want to squeeze in some actual play sessions of systems that we think are interesting, and maybe have some fun guests on the show. But all of that would require a ton of work, and that's one of the reasons why we've got it as that goal.
Absolutely. And we can give people who collaborate with us money.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, we like to do that. Anyway, so all of that here is at the top of Mages Emerge Ads, just to let you know that that's available, and the link, of course, is down there in the description. You can also, very, very quickly, this is one more little additional thing. There are different goals, or different levels of support that you can have. There's a $1, a $5, and a $7. $5 gets you a monthly newsletter where we're going to write little funny stuff on there. And then $7 gets you an exclusive podcast where we just talk about video games.
Yeah.
Or whatever the hell.
So you need to get in on that, because I guess this is the first of the month that we're recording this. And so we're gonna record one this month, and you don't want to miss it.
We are. Don't miss it.
Yeah. Don't miss it. It's going to be us. We may talk about stuff that we won't talk about anywhere else.
That's almost certainly true. But All of that said, that's a huge ad for ourselves at the beginning. Luckily, I paid myself all of that advertising revenue slash budget slash dollar make. Give dollar make me do the budget advertisement.
That was 20 Mithril tokens.
We're going to talk about Mithril tokens. So we start chapter 4. At the end of last episode, correct?
That's right.
And what was happening there?
Well, we were talking to two different people. I was talking to Bodhi. You were talking to some corpse in my game. I don't know what that person's name was.
But Aaron Linvale.
Aaron Linvale. The biggest jerk this side of wherever. I recently read a fan fiction about him, but that's a story for another time. And we were talking to those respective people, and we finally had schlepped about and done enough side quests to get what we paid for, which was passage to where Imowen is and Irenicus.
Spellhold.
So we just get on a ship, and I think we actually, we roll on the ship. I had some really great conversation between the Saemon Havarian and Bodhi, like as she was loading me on this ship. Saemon might be some of the best dialogue I've seen in this game, like his interactions with Bodhi. Did you have any fun like dialogue with Saemon?
So this dude, Saemon Havarian, is like the rascaliest captain of a boat who ever did rascal. But yeah, he's just kind of like no nonsense, but kind of a dick.
Oh, that's interesting. So there was this really great dynamic in the dialogue between Bodhi and him, where it was obvious that Bodhi like thinks that he's a rapscallion and not really trustworthy, but she's enlisted his aid because he's one of the few means of transport between here and Spellhold, basically, right?
Okay.
And so like there's like seven or eight like little exchanges between them where she kind of like subtly digs at him, and then he's very like highfalutin and kind of in a patronizing way almost like, oh well, I certainly hope that there's nothing ill between us. And Bodhi is like very theatrically, oh no, my esteem for you is among the stars, Saemon. right, and it's like they both obviously there's a relationship of total distrust and kind of animosity, but they're both like playing this part where he doesn't want to anger her because she's like this deadly vampire, she doesn't want to anger him because she needs his network. And actually, as we're crossing the ocean, Bodhi actually says, wow, it's so interesting that none of those pirate ship attacked us. None of those pirate ships attacked us. That's so strange. I saw that we were sending them signals in the night. Whatever for, dear Saemon? Why would you ever do that? Why would? And he was like, oh, well, of course, I was just pretending to be one of them so that we could sneak past and they would be none the wiser. And then Bodhi said, oh, well, that sounds so smart of you, Saemon. How clever of a ruse, right? It's some of the like most delightful dialogue I've seen in this game so far.
I got a little bit of that. It was much more Bodhi, so from what you're saying, Bodhi stays on the boat with you.
That's right. Bodhi comes with us.
So worth noting for people who might not remember the last episode, we took two paths through the last episode. So Danny went with the Vampire Guild, basically. I went with the Thieves Guild, and now we've like kind of met back up, but not quite met all the way back up because I don't have Bodhi, of course, because I defeated her in my game and she ran away. So Aaron Linvale gives me like this kind of second in command or like lieutenant who's there to quote unquote guard Saemon. Her name is Syme, and like she's there just to like make sure that Saemon doesn't get too rascally. And it's less delightful dialogue between Aaron and Saemon and then Syme and Saemon than it is like thieves who know that they are like that everything's above board as far as it can be, right? Does that make sense? So it's kind of like shop talk a little bit. So it's a different kind of dynamic. It's not nearly as fun.
They're kind of keeping tabs on. It's almost, even though both relationships are antagonistic, the Thieves Guilds are, the Thieves Guild is overtly keeping tabs on Saemon.
Yeah, yeah. It's much more explicit about how that's going.
Well, I guess so. I think maybe right before we get on the ship, or maybe right after we get on the ship, we kind of like go below deck and maybe have a little sleep. And there's a cutaway scene that is not a dream. It looks to be an actual scene.
What do we see?
So we actually see. So if you recall, the last cutaway we had to Spellhold was Irenicus wrecking everyone's stuff, right? And he even mentioned Imogen. So in this cutaway, he has Imogen imprisoned in like a glass tank of some kind. And he also has many other kind of people imprisoned in these various tubes. And it's a lot of, you know, typical hooded figure Irenicus banter about, oh, you do not know your potential. And then all these other people die in the tubes and their souls like get whisked away in these contraptions, and then Imogen passes out, and that's kind of the vision, right? Yeah.
Well, it's
up
even
to
worse.
His old shit again.
Well, they're like getting he's sucking people's souls out.
Sure.
Like it's bad. And also, I'm not sure if it's here or later in the game, you can actually look down to the status bar to see what's happening, and it's called Rapture of the Father.
Whoa.
That's the thing that like makes it look like people's souls are flying out of their bodies.
Well, anyway, I get to our destination with no problems whatsoever.
We get there, and we get to the pirate town of Bryn Law. Which is quite nice. It's a different kind of like small village than anywhere else in the game, I think.
Yeah,
it's got a different. It's kind of like it's like a concave harbor. Like it's a little town around the harbor. Basically, anything out of Pirates of the Caribbean. Pirates of the Caribbean just ripped off this video game here.
Yeah. So when I land, Bodhi says, "Saemon, you need to show Balthazar around," and Bodhi goes off somewhere else. And Saemon refuses to get off the boat and just kind of points me in the direction. Oh, go to that inn. My name does not have a very good reputation around here. I'm not well liked. Just keep out of trouble. Don't upset anybody. And he gives me a name of someone that can maybe help me break into Spellhold.
Yeah, that person is Sonic.
Sonic the Hedgehog?
S-A-N-I-K. Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, but does Saemon help you find Sonic?
No, so not for me. I don't know where our games come back together. But yeah, Saemon says, go over here, go get that guy. I step off the boat and he says, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold the heck on up here. Because I'm betraying the shit out of you here. I don't know if you've ever been betrayed before.
But this is what it feels like. This right now. Like.
Yeah, this is it. You are experiencing it at this moment. Right the heck right now.
Get betrayed, bro.
He actually literally says that. And then a shitload of vampires appear. And they just start, like, trying to kill me. But because we are back to story content, there seems to be an upper bound to how strong an enemy can be. Mm. You know, kind of we were talking about the level scaling and, like, you know, hitting the ceiling on that.
Mm-hmm.
I've hit the ceiling on that.
Mm, you wreck these vampires?
Yeah, basically everything in this chapter I had a very easy time with, up to and including, like, the final boss of the area. Mm. But yeah, so they attack me, and then he just, like, scuttles off like a crab on all fours.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I'm just left with, like, all right, I gotta go get Sanic. Mm-hmm. I gotta wander around Brenlaw. Did you do any wandering around?
I wandered around. I think that its uniqueness as a city is firmly established the second I go up the first set of stairs into Brenlaw, and there's just a pirate that's hostile that attacks me.
Yeah.
Which I think, like, this is a unique experience in some ways to, you know, compared to other towns that we've been in, Baldur's Gate, Athkatla, other smaller towns, right? There were occasionally instances where there would be a fight. There was usually some kind of dialogue before that established, oh, this person is drunk and they're belligerent and they talk to you and you can, like, say some things that anger them and then they attack you. No, this is just a pirate. And it's not like it's not a beast that's plaguing the town. This is just a denizen of the town. And
yeah, they just live there. And they're, like, standing beside another pirate who's not hostile.
Sure.
Like, that pirate, totally cool. Don't you worry about him.
But when the area is loaded, the Baldur's Gate engine makes some quick calculations about, Gygaxian calculations about which pirates have drank too much grog.
Mm-hmm.
And that determines who's going to be KOS.
It's a simulation.
Mm-hmm.
100%. So yeah, I saw that. Saw some duelists on the street, just some people fighting for honor. And did you see this?
I did. Yeah, the one kind of highfalutin upper class fellow, and the other fellow who did not know the words that the previous fellow was using.
Yes, and even better, the announcer, or like the guy overseeing the duel, who was like, "You have to hurry up. There's five more duels today. I've got to get to the duel." So I love that Brenlaw is, like, chock full of people fighting for honor.
Mm-hmm.
And that
it's a real place.
It's a Gygaxian fantasy.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I go to this inn and I meet up with this Sanic fellow.
Well, so one thing really quick. Did you do this quest for Jinia?
Jog my memory.
Okay. So Jinia is this woman on the far right side of the map who I don't even think talked to me. I think I had to initiate dialogue with her. And she was like, "Hey, will you give me some money?" And I said, "Sure, you can have. I have, like, as much money as all of the Lords of Waterdeep combined."
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can have. She wanted, like, 10 gold. And I said, "Get all that gold." And I said, "What do you need all this gold for?" And she said, "Well, let me tell you about the history of Brenlaw."
Hmm.
Yeah, so she went hard in it. So said, you know, when she was a young girl, Brenlaw was its own island nation, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
State, city state. And Desharik, the pirate lord, was in a pirate war with some other pirate. And he lost that pirate war. And so instead of, I guess, riding off across the high seas, he just went and took Brenlaw. You know, he missed his first goal, and then he shot for the second one, went for the B-plot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just came in and he murdered everybody, basically. And he instituted pirate law, which means that anything that a pirate takes, they own.
The Finders Keepers Island.
I think you mean pirate law. But yes, 100%. And so she's like, "Oh, I've got my brother."
You know what? From now on at work, like when I go to, like, a neutral desk at work and I get a stapler, instead of when somebody says, "Hey, that's my stapler." So instead of saying Finder's Keeper, I'm just going to look at them, make eye contact and say, "Pirate law.
Pirate law. I think you might have missed that on Monday we instituted pirate law at this office."
and then stab them with a rapier.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're trying in the in some strategic offices. We're attempting pirate law this month just to see if that shakes up and maybe innovates some of the things that maybe have gotten people too complacent. So she says that, yeah, her brother is with her, and there's this dude who is basically her pimp. Like, for the game does not use that language, but that is what it is saying. And that, like, he holds full rights to her and her brother and all this stuff. And so I say, look, I'm just going to go kill that guy. And so I go and do that. And I give her a bunch of money. And here's the interesting thing. I mean, this is an interesting story in a general sense. But there's a smuggler who's going to get her off the island and takes her to Olgros Beard. Do you remember? Wow. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah.
She's probably going to go live in that house where there are those cultists still waiting.
In the barn. She's going to live in the house beside the barn with the cultists who sit there quietly.
Every day when she goes out to milk the cow, she'll make conversation. No, we're still waiting for Balthazar.
He's got to come back. There's no way he doesn't.
Oh, man.
But yeah. I just thought it was
a cool... No, great tie-in. That's cool.
I thought it was a cool little side quest, and it was like I just happened to be at this corner of the map. I don't think there was any way to get to her other than talking to her.
And the answer was no. I did not do that side quest, apparently.
Okay. So mm-hmm. But you did go talk to Sanic.
I did. I went to talk to Sanic. That was a brief conversation, because just when we were getting to the meat of it, you know, a little fellow teleported in and basically said, this is what you get, buddy. This is what you get, buddy. And then shot an arrow right into this fellow's heart, right into Sanic's heart.
Just one shot.
And Sanic just dies, dies like a chump.
Mm-hmm.
And I make conversation with the assassin, who's named Assassin. Like, they're very explicit here.
Mm-hmm.
And the assassin's like, well, I don't know what you were doing talking to Sanic, but be on the safe side, might as well kill you too. So that's a broad assassination writ, right? Please kill Sanic and anyone who's talked to him in the last 20 minutes.
I mean, if you're paid well, you got to do the job right, you know?
Yeah.
You can't phone that one in.
No, not under pirate law.
No, pirate law is a very explicit kind of institution.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fool around.
Pirate law, everyone is a lawyer in pirate law.
That's right. Pirate law was instituted through tort reform, which meant that everyone was forced to take the bar. You get your driver's license, and then you take pirate law bar exam.
If you've ever been in a tabletop role-playing game and you know the rules lawyer, in pirate law, everyone is that, but with murder.
Mm-hmm. Like, when can you do it?
When can you murder? Who are you allowed to?
And thievery, to be fair. And
thievery, sure.
They don't call it thievery, though. It's just possession ownership changing.
Yeah. It's mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, every single person. So, yeah, so Sonic gets killed, and then the assassin also gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a complicated plot line. But
I think that the enhanced edition may have given me more clues than the original game had.
Hmm.
That's what the feeling I got, because I was inundated with plot points that I was not explicitly given by my journal. Like, my journal started really leaping to conclusions after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we talked to Sanic because he's supposed to get us into Spellhold. Mm-hmm. And Spellhold's, like, basically on top of the mountain behind Brynlaw. There's two things on this island. There's Brynlaw, there's Spellhold. And so, yeah, he's just supposed to be able to get us in there. And so then the game is like, well, you know who might know something? His wife, Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of get, like, embroiled into Claire and Sanic, and then the Courtesans Guild, and then the leader of the Courtesans Guild, Galvina.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you understand all of this?
So I initially got it from the bartender, where the bartender was like, well, because this assassin came in and messed up my stuff, I am going to tell you some information. Okay, Sanic had a wife. It looked like probably it was Galvina, who is attempting to kill Sanic because Sanic married one of Galvina's courtesans, and Galvina considered Claire, that courtesan, her property. So that by pirate law, that is not a lawful acquisition. So Galvina sent an assassin to kill Sanic. So maybe he told Claire about his knowledge of how to get into Spellhold. But I didn't go directly to Galvina's place. I walked around looking for it for a little bit. I stumbled into Desharik's hut, had a very strange conversation with him where several of my dialogue options would have allowed me to pretend like I was insane for no reason. So I had no reason to choose any of those. And then after that conversation with Desharik, my journal just has three updates where it's like, oh, there are two ways to get into Spellhold. You can either pretend you are insane in front of Desharik, or you can go like get this ward stone from this fellow named Perth.
So did you skip the Galvina quest then?
No, I went ahead and did it because it was the right thing to do. But by the time I did it, I already had secured my entrance into Spellhold.
But so you were theoretically able to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's super weird. So yeah, what I did is I just walked right into Galvina's guild hall. And they're like, you walk in, you talk to a guy, and he's like, hey there, what are you up to? And I was like, I want to get into the guild. And he was like, well, there's nothing really here. You should go outside. You can see all the people who are, you know, a part of our guild on the streets outside. And then a little hidden door popped up, and I just walked through it. And he was like, oh, no, you don't. You do not walk through that hidden door. And I just got attacked by, like, dozens of people over the next, like, 2 or 3 minutes. I steamrolled my way through them all the way to Galvina. And as I got there, she was using her lawful pirate law rights to execute Claire. She was saying, you are sentenced to death for breaking our guild bond or whatever. And so then I killed Galvina, and then I killed her like wizard buddy who was there.
Everybody's got to have a under pirate law. If you have a certain status, you got to have a hedge wizard.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, I think it's just like a safety concern, honestly.
Absolutely.
Because if people can just wander in under at any moment and steal your shit, whatever that shit is, you need to, like, magic is the best way to prevent that.
You need that for the defense, and you need a magical scribe with, like, a tome that auto-updates your full inventory, because that's the first step of prevention, right? That's the first step of preventing getting your stuff taken under pirate law, is having a thorough inventory of what you own.
Excel would would make so much money.
Yeah. But they have to use hedge wizards. That's all they have instead of Excel.
Well, you know what? Let me give you a little tidbit. Ed Greenwood, the creator of The Forgotten Realms, used to write a column for Dragon Magazine where he said that Elminster would come hang out with him on this big rock that was behind Ed Greenwood's house. And Elminster would sometimes use the computer.
I don't believe in like 1991. Anything you just said.
It's true, I promise you. I've read the articles. So I'm just saying. He would write like self-fan fiction hanging out with Elminster as like a way of talking about whatever fantasy trope or whatever he was writing his article about.
Ed Greenwood in a different medium is just David Lynch.
100%. Yeah, it's 100%. Like,
and let me tell you about this time Elminster came and talked to me.
I think the Forgotten Realms speak for themselves.
Dritz and I just, we don't get along anymore. That relationship soured.
But this is the interesting thing, I guess, is that all Claire tells me is exactly what you already knew. You can either go talk to Desharik and pretend to be a someone who belongs in Spellhold, which he, I guess, can kick people into, unclear.
So someone told me this, and I think it was the innkeeper, that basically, while Spellhold is a place for the magically dangerous everywhere else, on this island, it's basically Desharik's black site.
Oh, so just it's the localness.
If you get on Desharik's shit list, he will send you to Spellhold, which is, like, horribly frightening, right?
Yeah, you don't want to have that happen.
No.
And I'll be honest, later in the game, when I went to Spellhold, I didn't see any people who might be there because of Desharik. So they're dead.
Yeah. I think they end up in Riddle Land.
Oh, Riddle Land is just the worst. So did you do the Disharic route, or did you do the other route with Perth the Adept?
I did the Perth route.
I also did that. You want to talk about Perth?
Because when I talked to Disharic, and I turned him down, or like I said something dismissive, he walked away and was never seen again.
Oh.
So, yeah, one wrong move and you've got one way off out of Brindlaw. But yeah, I go and talk to Perth, and Perth's kind of in a trance, right?
Yeah, Perth is complicated. I think he's like mentally dominated.
Mm.
Like even more than a trance, right? He's like programmed.
He does say some robot-y things, mm-hmm. right? He does say things that sound almost Hooded Figure Irenicus-y. I am to test the ball spawn, like something like that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Not in robot voice, but it's not voice acted, so I'm within my rights to interpret it that way.
To assert the fact that it is, in fact, robot voice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
Yeah. So Perth attacks me, and Perth gets got.
So there's a special bit of dialogue. If you have Yoshimo, I'll never get mm-hmm. it right.
Sure.
In your party, Yoshimo says, hold on now. You can't do this to us. You can't attack me. And then Perth says, well, I'll do whatever the hell I damn want. No, he doesn't. Hold on. Yeah, I actually wrote it down. He says, Yoshimo is inconsequential to the plan of testing the ball spawn, which I thought was a very strange, like, one-off piece of dialogue. But there's actually quite a bit of, like, party-based dialogue throughout the rest of this, and I'll talk about that when we get there. But we kill Perth. He drops a spell book of infinite spells.
Pretty cool. What was on your page one?
Fireball.
Same with me. I wonder if it's the same.
It might start the same. Like, it might always, like, if there was, like, a variable that tracks it, it might always start at, like, one.
I don't know if I want to flip the page.
I don't think
so,
I do either.
So explain what this means, right?
So it's a spellbook of infinite spells. The idea is that if you, whatever the page it is open to, anyone can use it.
Mm-hmm.
So a thief can figure out how magic works, and they can read Fireball off page one. But if you can turn the page to get a new spell, but the previous spell is lost forever, and eventually you will turn to the last page.
And then you can't turn anymore. You're stuck with whatever's on the last page.
Exactly. So it's a cool little risk or reward thing, and I very purposefully did not look any information up about it. But yeah, mm-hmm. Fireball is pretty good.
Yeah. And miraculously, Balthazar can read this.
Oh my god!
Or use it, right?
We've turned him into a murdering machine. He's empowered by Perth the Adept's like infinite artifact.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we get the Ward Stone, and we can just walk right into Spellhold.
We walk in there, and I talk to the dude who is called the Coordinator. And he's got a very, very familiar voice. Sounds like a mysterious stranger, even.
Yeah, Balthazar attacked him immediately.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't even, like, before dialogue even triggered?
No, so dialogue triggered, and this person said, oh, follow me. So dialogue triggers, and I'm like, I need to find, where's Imowen? And then he starts talking, and I'm like, I have heard, if you are the main character of this game, if we put ourselves in Balthazar's mind, or Ticklevar's mind,
mm-hmm.
you immediately know this is Irenicus.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
You have been hearing this person for the last, like, year.
In your sleep.
In your sleep, in various places, in like, just popping up out of nowhere. And also, you were kidnapped by this person and tortured by this person. So Balthazar, like, just gets through the dialogue. This person starts walking away. Balthazar hits haste and starts attacking him and starts dealing damage.
Mm-hmm.
Got him down. to about half health. We're turning a corner, and then something strange happens where all of these gates start appearing, like the little gate animation of someone teleporting in. So, like, three or four gates just, like, choo-choo-choo. Dialogue triggers again where he's saying, oh, look at this child. She can turn her face into anyone else. Isn't that weird? And I'm saying, whatever, get out of dialogue so I can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Pums out of dialogue. I hit him a few more times, and he despawns, and a delayed gate animation pops up. And I think, ooh, did he turn the corner? Let me see if I can find him. I turn the corner. Irenicus appears and starts saying stuff that does not make sense. Starts saying, ah, we slipped something into your soup. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You are at literally like below half health. Just shut up. I have you exactly where I want you. No, you don't. I am standing in the middle of like a hallway about to kill you.
Hey, well, that's exactly where he wanted you.
And then the weirdest thing happened. I pass out, wake up in a test tube, the same test tube Imowen was in, and he repeats the exact same dialogue, and I have the exact same options to respond to that dialogue. So I completely, like, broke this section of the game.
What came in with the other gates? Anything?
Nothing. They just, like, appeared for no reason, right? Something very strange happened, and I broke some gate, like, game term gate in the game. Like, I skipped something by attacking him. So I don't know how it's actually supposed to go.
Well, I mean, right here at the top, kudos to the game designers and developers, both in the original iteration and the enhanced edition, for creating a failsafe for that. There is a fail case if the triggers don't happen right that it takes you to the next piece of the game. It could have just hardlocked. You know what
I
mean?
I could have just been stuck, right, and had to reload.
Exactly. So that's actually pretty strong work on their part.
Mm-hmm.
So what's supposed to happen is you do a little walkabout, and he tells you about the kid with the face and the former warden of the former coordinator and some other people. It's fine. It's just to be like, hey, golly gee whiz, how about all of these weirdos who are here? It's kind of gross a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But what is cool is that there are two characters here that I recognized and remembered. There might be more than that. And I want to talk about them. T-Ax is here.
Ooh.
If you remember T-Ax, Lord of Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Who allows you to live simply because it is his will. He's pretty cool. And Dradiel is here from Werewolf Island.
Oh, I didn't see Dradiel.
He is that asshole wizard that made me go inside of that ship and get his spell book for him, and he was going to teleport me home, and then he just teleported himself somewhere else.
Damn.
I was so mad at him like a year ago. And good to know. Well, I mean, sad to know that he was locked up in an asylum. But spoilies, at the end of this, he's free, so that's pretty good. I'm not mad about that. So yeah, so you get to the end of the hallway, and then you have the conversation that you were just talking about. So he says,
okay. So you don't see Imowen or anything like that, right?
Well, no. So the last person you see is Imowen.
Oh.
And she's like in kind of like she's drugged or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the coordinator says, ah, of course, I am Irenicus.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, shit. And then Yoshimo in my party says, hey, you're getting betrayed, bro. I know you got betrayed mere hours ago. But here you are again, getting betrayed by me, your party member.
The feeling so nice, you had to taste it twice.
Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it's revealed. If you have a party, I don't quite know how it actually worked for you, but that Yoshimo and Saemon Haverian were feeding me like poisoned herbs the entire time that we were on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that I was, like, susceptible to some sleepy potion, magic, blah, blah, blah. And I pass out, wake up in the test tube, same thing.
Yeah, okay. So that was the one bit of dialogue that didn't make sense, because Irenicus, when he did his reveal the first time, he said, of course I am here with Imowen. And I'm like, where's Imowen?
Mm.
I don't see her in the hallway. But no, kudos to the game designers for actually programming around someone like me.
Mm-hmm. Who is at level 40 and smashing through the game literally with a hammer at this point.
We fall into this in this dreamy sleep vision land.
Lord in heaven, the yet another vision, and this one is very frustrating because I could not get it to trigger. Actually, I broke the scripting on this one, and it did not have a failsafe, so I did have to reload.
Okay.
And it was kind of a bummer. So what you're supposed to do, you wake up in Candlekeep. This is a vision that we've had a couple times. And you go to where you're supposed to talk to Gorion all the way back at the very beginning of the game. You're talking to Gorion right there in front of the door for Candlekeep, the front door. And who's there but a giant pit fiend?
Yeah, it's a pit fiend. It's also the same model of the demon that gobbled you up in all of your visions in Siege of Dragonspear.
Mm-hmm.
It's not greenish yellow like the other one was, but it's the same model.
Yeah. And he says, "Hey there. What's up? My name's Jeff, and I'm here to say it's nice to rap in a friendly way.
But before we get to that, I just want to tell you about MeUndies."
Mm-hmm.
And he tells you, he does his pitch. He's got to make his ad revenue. Mm-hmm. You know, don't belittle him for that. And then he finally gets around to telling you
you got to give up your stat points to like get through the section of the game. And I tried to talk my way around this because I rolled those up for a reason.
Yeah,
like I hit that reroll button 400 million times to get the stats I wanted. But he says no. So I give up some more intelligence. I'm at 9 intelligence. Ticklevar the Sorcerer.
It doesn't matter. You don't use stats as a sorcerer.
But you know what? It doesn't make me feel good. I'm role-playing this character.
Mm. I also gave up intelligence.
Everyone's a dumb stat. No one needs it. Because the whole point of this, this little dream, is that inside Candlekeep, Imowen is there. At least a vision of Imowen, some sort of internal projection by Ticklevar or by Balthazar of Imowen, and she says, "Hey, let's unite our powers together. By our powers combined, we will beat up our dad."
Hmm.
So you gotta go outside and you meet your dad. It's Baal, mm-hmm. and it's like the actual god, because he's mm-hmm. saying some shit that you don't have access to. He's like, "You're a gateway. You're just like some life force that I'm supposed to absorb. Like, you mean nothing. And if you try to go toe-to-toe with him, or at least if I try to go toe-to-toe with him, I can't kill him."
Yeah. So, this is kind of the reveal of the fact that Saravok was just trying to do what Baal was trying to do. It's a Highlander logic where if Saravok can kill enough Baal spawn, Saravok will become the next, like, be infused with divinity and become the next god, whereas Baal wanted to spread his seed around so that he could eventually reap those crops, basically, to reinfuse himself with divinity so he could become god again.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of, like, weird versions of this narrative, right? So in Baldur's Gate 1, or this is an interesting, like, rearticulation of what Saravok wanted to do, because it seemed pretty clear to me in the first game, and it's
that he wanted to like start a war and exactly. just cause as much murder as possible,
which is what this seems to suggest is there's like a 1-2 punch to it, right? Because mm-hmm. what Irenicus has been doing, killing all these people around us in the same way that he was killing people like in the original experiments and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Doing that like activates the spark, and then you can like start murdering other Baal spawn, I think.
Mm.
So it's kind of like a once you go. But in any case, Baal says, "Look, I'm gonna wreck your shit now to absorb your spirit, bro." And then he chases me around. So to get out of the dream, you have to lure him into Candlekeep, into the symbolic heart of hearts of your education. And Imowen says, "Once again, by our powers combined, we're going to fight our dad," and then you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you win, I guess.
Sure. Fade to black.
Fade to black. Except for me, the first two times I tried it, where I could not fade to black because the scripting just didn't work.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a bummer.
Bad, sad times.
So what happened when you woke up?
Well, I'm in a murder maze. I'm being confronted by Bodhi. Bodhi is saying, "Hey, I was told to kill y'all, but I've got a hobby. My hobby is like putting people down in this maze that the builders of this asylum built, and it's real mean. It's like a real mean little dungeon down here, and I'm gonna like let you guys loose down here, and I'll come chase after you and kill you. And this is just I don't play an instrument, and I don't like paint, and I don't have any kind of athletic pursuits. This is kind of my deal now."
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that a vampire would get bored of doing of doing things that aren't this, you know.
This is the ultimate game.
It's kind of like the roguelike of being a vampire, right? There's infinite variability within like a very specific structure of rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. It's like playing Spelunky.
Yeah.
But for vampires.
Sure. So
it's just a dungeon-ass dungeon.
It's the dungeon-ass dungeon. So I guess before you begin, you talk to Emmeline. You kind of talk it through about, oh, what are we going to do? And I say, Emmeline, I'm sorry, I don't have room for you. Okay. And Emmeline says, oh, really? Are you sure you don't have room? And I'm sorry, we're full. We're completely at capacity over here. I am so sorry. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Team Balthazar.
And Emmeline says, yeah, okay. And then the weirdest thing happens, right? Emmeline says, oh, I think I've heard of a place called the Copper Cornet, even though she has never been in Athkatla. The moment she entered Athkatla, it was Joaquin's Promenade. It was like several miles from the Copper Cornet. And she was immediately like whisked away to Spellhold. So the only way she's heard about this place is on the inside. Like another inmate must have, or another kind of patient, if you will, must have told her about it. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. TX.
Mm-hmm. TX. You gotta go to the Copper Cornet.
I control everyone in the Copper Cornet. They are my puppets. TX is cool.
But I imagine you have Emmeline in your party.
Yeah. Yoshimo out, Emmeline in. Yeah, so this is just like a straight up, like, second edition style. Every room is different. Mm-hmm. They're kind of correlated as far as enemies are concerned, but mostly it's like gimmicky puzzles, like gimmicky one-off puzzles that you have to solve.
Yeah, trolls, umber hulks, some greater mummies. Here's some greater mummies. Ooh, there's an illithid behind that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the kind of the anti-Gygaxian dungeon. The Gygaxian dungeon being like, oh, we have like these environments and they all like feed into one another and there's an ecology. Just because you throw an Otyug in here, that would not make this dungeon, you know, because there, I actually do run into an Otyug in this dungeon.
Well,
but it's not a garbage disposal. It's just there.
It's just hanging out. I mean, that's the interesting thing, right? Like the story that we're given is like the asylum people builders made this thing and they made it basically to like test people, right? Is the idea. Mm-hmm. And so, within that justification, everything is quote-unquote Gygaxian, because some jackass made it, like, arbitrarily, sure. Right?
The same way that Irenicus's dungeon, the very first dungeon in Baldur's Gate 2, you can call it, oh, it's Gygaxian because a very powerful wizard is there. That's why there's a gateway to, like, the elemental plane of air. That's why there's, like, a little garden with some nymphs. But I think that you have to like draw the line between saying, oh, well, the lore somehow justifies this versus actual Gygaxian.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
I think drawing that line, we can say this is the dungeon-ass dungeon and not a Gygaxian environ.
Exactly. So let's just go through this.
Yeah. This is AKA Riddleland.
Just straight up.
There are what? How many? Three? Four? Instances of riddles?
For... Yes. Well, it depends on if you think, like, picking up items and putting them in containers, or, like, matching up paintings with walls or riddles or not. But but two solid riddle rooms.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm just going to list them off here. There's a room with a portal in it, and if you click it, a pit fiend comes out. and there it's just hanging out. There is a room with a bunch of masks that ask you kindergarten level riddles, and then you can choose to solve them or not. And if you do solve them all, you get some tokens. There is one with the vampire guy who made this place, and he is crazy. That's the game's entire justification for that. In that tone. There's a book that you click on that just generates monsters for you to fight. I fought a beholder and an illithid. There is a there's two ways to get genies.
There's one behind the same portal as the one where the pit fiend appears. If you bring a different stone to that room, and you get the stone by putting a bunch of objects in cups based on the description of what am I, right? And another one appears behind a wall that if you hang a genie portrait on it that you acquire in a different room, it opens, and lo and behold, there's a genie behind that genie portrait wall.
So where's our genie count then?
That's 14 and 15 right there.
Oh, that's two more. And so that's kind of it. I mean, it's spread out over three different levels, and it's kind of big, but mostly it's just some like boring fights. I found it very unengaging. Not thrilled with this part of the game.
Yeah, and I think that for the same reason, you're probably not super thrilled with kind of the super dungeons, right?
Yeah.
Like the Durlag Keep, the Watcher's Tower. It's kind of like a lot of the same stuff that you see there without like... You can have like an overarching environmental story in the same way. Oh, that vampire was the one that built the place, right? But that just feels like a justification after the fact for including a bunch of Dungeons and Dragons stuff in a place. And then figuring out later, oh, and why is all this stuff here? Well, a really powerful vampire did it, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're trying to get out, Bodhi is there. And she says, hey, I told you I'd try to let you get out, but I'm here to wreck you and kill you first.
Welcome to betrayal number three, Tiklvar.
Get ready for it. And so I summoned a bunch of different elementals, and we punched on her some. And then my body started tingling, and then a giant lizard insect exploded out of it, and I began relentlessly attacking everyone around me. I turned into what is called the Slayer. I began screaming God hates us all and just shredding it on the guitar.
you drank too much Monster.
Yeah,
energy drink.
Way too much Monster energy drink.
I
did a 5-hour energy as well. It's bad for me. So the Slayer, I guess it gets explained in the next section. We'll talk about it, but
sure.
So Bodhi says, oh shit, I don't like that at all. I'm out of here. I don't like the Slayer nearly as much as I thought I might.
Now, was the Slayer attacking your teammates?
It did at the very end, and I just made them all run away. It's kind of like a berserk warrior.
Yeah.
So we go out of here, and then we get in this weird like shifting zone that's called like the Judgment area. And basically the game is like, here's a bunch of more unrelated areas. This is a test by the creators of the asylum in order to test if you are ready to leave or not. So have you accomplished whatever the hell it was you're supposed to accomplish here arbitrarily or not?
Which the way you can tell if someone is sane is if they can answer a few puzzles and kill kobolds in the kobold room, like swampy guys in the swamp room, troll folks in the troll room. And yeah, they're sane if they do that.
Yeah, well, you got to answer questions too.
If you're really rude to the apparition after you answer the last riddle, because I know this because I had to reload for an unrelated reason. The first run, I was very rude, and the apparition says, "Well, given that this is I guess an asylum and it's about the mind, I'll turn into an illithid." So he just turned into an illithid and attacked me. Okay. And then I defeated it, and he said, okay, well, you're good to go, because you did that. And the second one, I was not as rude, and he just asked the question and let me leave.
Yeah, I was not rude at all, and I just kind of zipped through there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's apparently several different rooms that this could be in. I viewed, a couple episodes ago, after I went through this, I looked at the official strategy guide, and there's a whole page explaining, like, how you get from one room to the other that I wish I'd looked at beforehand, maybe. Mm. But there's like 9 rooms, like optional rooms that you can kind of go through depending on how you answer the questions that the apparitions ask you.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you end up back in Spellhold. I end up talking to Saemon Haverian. He's right there, like right outside the thing. He's like, hey, bro, I know I just betrayed you. You remember the first betrayal a little bit earlier? That was me.
Mm-hmm.
You should let everybody out. You should. Irenicus is here. He's rude. I'm working with him, but I don't like him very much. So why don't you just let everybody out, and they'll just attack him, and then you can attack him too. And I said, okay, I guess I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
All the other betrayal has really made me immune to the emotions of the original betrayal.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like you never really get over a bad breakup until the next breakup.
Mm-hmm.
You've had so many breakups since Saemon broke your heart that you're fine with Saemon.
So when we come out of the room with Saemon Haverian, we are right outside of the testing room where Irenicus was doing all his nefarious magics. Did you try to go kill Irenicus?
Of course.
Yeah, I did too. How'd that go for you?
I was able to get 2 hits in with haste. So I was able to like, get to him before dialogue initiated and hit him twice. And dialogue initiates and you can kind of say, I'm going to kill you. And Irenicus is like, no, I have your soul now. You don't understand. Like, I took it. I took your divine essence. That's why you lost your god special abilities that you got at, you know, the early levels of Baldur's Gate, right?
Were we super clear about that a minute ago? That's what happened.
Yeah.
So before...
No, after the you wake up from that dream, you do not have your special god abilities anymore, your ball spawn powers.
Yeah. So, Irenicus says, before he sends you down into the crap hole with, mm-hmm. with Bodhi, he says, I stole your divine spark. Imowen also has a divine spark. She's your mm-hmm. half-sister. I stole it, too. R.I.P. your whole shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe I just want to make sure we're very clear about that's what happened here. So now, you like Irenicus, like Bodhi, you're going to be wasting away for the rest of the game until you get your divine spark back.
You've got the problem Irenicus had mm-hmm. before.
It didn't really seem like he had any problems before. It seemed like he was an all-powerful wizard who could solve all issues.
Well, we knew from the very first episode of Baldur's Gate 2 that he could not feel. That's one of the reasons why he enlisted or why he captured, enslaved those nymphs. He was trying to like provoke some kind of emotion or spirituality within himself that he seemed incapable of. So might have been some kind of problem he was dealing with there. In any case.
So the game itself is preventing you from killing Irenicus. So you gotta make a choice.
Yeah, Irenicus basically says, I've got your soul, snaps his fingers, and you die. Mm-hmm. And there's no save, it's just some real DM killing you stuff.
Yes. And so I walked around and I eventually found a dude named Lonk the Sane, who's like the dude who like has the one key, just all of Spellhold. He's like the super. And I was like, hey, why don't you let everybody go? And he said, well, how much money are you going to give me for it? So I gave him 2,000 gold, and he just went off and freed everybody.
That's not how it worked for me at all, because I said, you need to let everybody go. And he said, that's a terrible idea. And I said, look, you need to let everybody go. And then he said, look, I'm over my dead body.
Hmm.
And then we fought.
So it was over his dead body you were able to do it?
In fact, yeah. Apparently all of the... There was apparently like some kind of sensor on his heart. And when it stopped beating, all of the jail cells opened.
That's pretty good. So did you get the little cutscene where you're all talking about attacking Irenicus?
Yeah, it's a real Ocean's 11 situation.
It really is. There's like a girl who can see through all of the planes, and then
mm-hmm.
An all-powerful bard who's been reduced to the mind of a child,
mm-hmm.
And then T-Ax, who's mm-hmm. allowing all of you to live.
Mm-hmm. And you say, we need to team up, and T-Ax says, I will not work as a team, I will do it myself, but then just still accompanies you.
Yes, but I will let you all help. he's too good. Yeah, so he, T-Ax opens the door, And you all storm into the Irenicus test chamber, but no one
else. Do you not teleport in?
Yes, you do. I'm sorry.
I think it's that fellow from Werewolf Island.
Yeah,
right?
Dradil. Yeah, that's
Dradil
right.
Dradil teleports everybody in.
So we go in, but no one else helped me in this fight. Like, it was only my team that did anything.
That's interesting. I got Irenicus down to, like, 2 pips, and then the former warden, that character, cast Time Stop.
Oh, yeah, I did have that happen, I guess. I guess that's true. Maybe they were in the fight, and I just don't remember them being in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might have died very early.
Well, we got the footage right in front of us here.
Mm-hmm. Well, consequently, I only have half of my footage for this. I have this part. But I just forgot to hit record for like the first hour of playing the game.
Oh no! Mm-hmm. So well, we got all of Balthazar's footage.
Yeah, the first third of this is going to be very Balthazar heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So I ended up killing Irenicus, or not killing him, but taking him to 0 hit points.
And he gets real defensive and catty.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the end,
he does. He's like, "How dare you? I let you win. I just wanted to plan my mission here." And he zips off.
You know
off.
What? It's not even cool here. So you can, like, have this place, because I'm so over this asylum.
He's really over. He's been living here so long. But yeah, it was actually really easy, kind of like what I was saying at the beginning of the show, or this episode, rather, that, like, we're a little over-leveled for this area.
Yeah, I think the first time I played this game, I had not done all of that Chapter 2 stuff. I think I basically went right through the plot. And I think that I have a memory of this fight being relatively challenging.
Oh, I remember it being hard as nails.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is if you're not a spellcasting class. I've played this game a few times through as a ranger, and that might have been one of those times, and that might have been harder. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he like teleports out. We have won the day, but for me, Yoshimo comes back in, and he says, "Listen, I have a Gias on me. Gias? Mm-hmm. How do you say this word?
Is it gaze?
Gaze? I don't know. Anyway, the idea within the world of fantasy fiction is that it's basically a wizard's promise. Right? So you made a deal. It's making a deal with the devil, right? So you say you wanted something and you got it, but you've issued like an oath of fealty with your life that will be magically maintained. So you can do what the wizard wants, and you'll keep your life, or you can refuse and you'll just die.
It's apparently Irish, by the way, so it's Gesh.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know. I'm glad
we're really teaching people on Mages and Murder Dads.
Well, I also wonder if Advanced Dungeons and Dragons rules knew that. You know what I mean? So that's what he says. So he's like, "Look, I'm gonna die if I don't try to kill you, and if I maybe am able to kill you, I might be able to keep my life." And so I slayed the hell out of him. Even though he didn't have Celestial Fury +3.
Like he, ooh, so did you lose the weapon?
No, he had it in his hand. I just looted it off his body.
Oh.
Mm-hmm, he had all of his same equipment.
Oh, that's a clever little way of you being able to get all your equipment back.
So we did that, and so then Saemon shows back up one more time. He says, "Listen, I read Irenicus's journal. I know where he is. He's going to a place called Solden Esalar, which is a like elven town, elvish city."
Mm-hmm.
He says, "They left by portal, but that portal could be trapped. But I know where they're going. So we can get in a boat, and we could maybe even beat them there."
Because that makes sense.
That makes 0% sense, because a portal is teleporting. It's instantaneous. It's like you take a portal to get on a steamship, and then you get on the steamship to go the whole way. So yeah,
it could be one of those portals where like a Minecraft type portal instead, where you go to hell and there's some kind of time dilation that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels for you like it only took a little while, but for everybody else, it actually took quite a while.
Took the full time. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so he made a persuasive case, I think, that they would trap the portal behind themselves to keep us from following.
Sure.
So I said, we're going to take that damn boat. Also, because I did look up what the difference was, and basically, if you take the portal, you miss half of Chapter 4.
Yeah.
So we took the boat.
So we're just going to have some, looks like next episode's going to be some of that, like, side quest content in 4.
Mm-hmm. The only real side quest content in 4, real boat action time.
Some real boat action time. We're going to meet some interesting little creatures.
Have you done it already?
I remember it.
Oh, I don't remember it at all. So I might not have ever done it when I played before. I might be.
Oh, that's fun.
Might have been a portal kid. Well this was episode 31, right?
Yeah, this was episode 31, and we're just so thankful that you're here at the end of the episode.
So like we said at the top of the episode, hit that like button down there, a little thumbs up. That would really help us out. Hit subscribe if you're not already subscribed and you've listened to an hour of us talking about the 31st episode of a Baldur's Gate franchise playthrough. You can follow us on Twitter. You can like the page on Facebook. You get updates from us there. The Twitter's pretty cool, I think. We've been really sharing some appropriate Baldur's Gate stuff.
It's stuff relevant to your interests. If you are here in the final minutes of an hour-long episode this far, you like the stuff we share.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to leave them in the comments, and come on over to the Discord, which is down in the description below, and you can see what we're up to over there. We're probably talking about video games. Like I said, all the stuff about the Patreon at the very beginning of the episode, that's going to be really cool. That's all coming at the end of the month, so you still have plenty of time to give us your dollar or $5 or $7
or $50 if you want to get to Wizard Slayer level.
If you want to be a Wizard Slayer, you get no additional content other than,
or maybe mystery content, we don't know. I think we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
I have no plans to currently give you additional content other than the self-satisfaction of giving us a lot of money.
And the title Wizard Slayer, the best class in this game.
There's no way to get the title of Wizard Slayer other than giving us $50 a month, which
that's
is
true.
Quite interesting. Mm-hmm. That's actually in the third edition rulebook. That's like actually a key difference between 2.5 and 3. Is how one gets the title of Wizard Slayer.
Yeah, because in third it was like a prestige class.
Mm-hmm.
But in second, it was just it was a quest, and it was giving us $50 a month.
Yep. All right, well, I'm Cameron.
I'm Danny.
And this was Mages and Murder Dads.
Ciao.
Goodbye.
A wonder.